can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious!
Well, now, before I tell you who's in the house, we've got football royalty in the house, Don, but just a note of thanks so much for coming in last week and giving everyone who was in the studio COVID. We had the man who started off the celebrant institution in Australia 50 years ago, Daly Messenger III, and you gave him COVID.
I thought I killed him. He's 86.
He spent a week in bed as a result of coming in and doing the podcast.
Well,
so
it could have been two of us pushing up daisies now, Daly and me.
Daly. Not Daly, Daly.
Daly.
Daly Messenger III, the grandson of the great Daly M. Mm. So you've put him in bed for a week. So
I put myself to bed too, don't forget that.
No, we're not worried about you being in
bed. Not the same bed.
And now that was the voice of Ivan.
Ivan. I'm sorry. Ivan.
Don't swear, Don.
Why?
Because we've got football royalty in and we've got people you've never met and you shouldn't be too...
crude or
cold. Too crude when you don't know people or the company you're dealing with. Ivan's back in from the mines. What's been happening over there, Ivan? Have you now, signing autographs and living off our reputation over there?
Yep, doing all the above. All the above.
Righto. So, having just had that small introduction, I'm going to get you to vacate the seat for a minute because we've got another special guest in. But the first of all, in the house, Don, royalty from Geelong and an ex-teammate and business partner of mine. He bought his brother in Dennis. And
all the way from Horsham.
And Dennis's wife, Nola, and Doug's wife, Elizabeth, they've come in just to see if you're as fucked... I shouldn't have said that. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that with those people over there I've never met. They've come in to see if you are as dumb as they probably thought you were, or I keep telling them you are.
Well, the last time I saw Doug, he reminded me of that bloke called Saddam Hussein. Do you remember when they got Saddam Hussein out of that hole? He was hiding in a hole. Now, Doug had a beard.
I know. He's trimmed.
And he looked shit ass. He looked like he was just about
language
ready to...
Language, Don. He's trimmed up a bit now. And, Doug, welcome to You Cannot Be Serious.
Fuck to you, too.
That's the man who, up until last week, was the fourth highest goal kicker in the history of the AFL.
No, sorry. I shouldn't have said that. I was a lay preacher, too.
And you often said, do preachers do more than lay people? You often told me that, and I only got it about 10 years after you said it the first time.
You're also a candidate for Polworth, too.
I was, yes.
Is that Liberal or Country Party?
Country Party.
Cardi.
Yeah, Country Party, yeah.
And that's your roots from Horsham.
What's that, Don?
That's his roots. He's from Horsham.
Narrowong he's from.
That's right.
When it was politically correct, you could say he was from the Thin Chinaman, but you're not allowed to say it now, Narrowong.
Where's Narrowong?
Near Horsham, you idiot.
No, that's down
Port
there.
Ferry.
Portland, yeah. Port Ferry, yeah, halfway Portland. Through.
I was finishing saying that up until last week when Buddy Franklin has kicked two more goals than him, he was the fourth highest goal kicker in the history of the competition. How about, and that's when they only played 18 games a year. In the mud, that's right. Mm. With those prodigious,
prolific, torpedoes.
No better in the world.
Doug, do you remember, and this is a... There are certain things in your career you remember, and I do remember you showing me how to kick a torpedo at Glenfree Oval. It was a lunchtime midweek. I don't know if you remember that. You had your business in Burwood Road.
Yes.
And for some reason you were over there and I happened to be down there. But it's the best lesson I have ever received with regard to kicking a ball.
Was it?
And it was the torpedo. Yeah. I don't know what you did. Because
he could kick it, you couldn't.
It was Glenfree Road. No, it was on the bloody oval, you idiot.
That's what I mean. And that's when I actually kicked it just over three Ks.
I know, because it got caught on that train going to Ferdinand Gully.
Working beautifully, you two. Doug was a great instructor, but you retained nothing because you couldn't kick over a jam tin.
Listen, I'm serious. How did you keep that thing straight? Because just prior to, I played with him for part of a season. John Peck used to kick the torpedo, yes, and he was an excellent executionist of it. But he couldn't control it because he put too much spin on, and it'd go straight, and then all of a sudden it just deviated, and he couldn't correct his. So how did you keep yours straight? It was beautiful.
Because that's the way I lined it up. A lot of people in the torpedo, they line it on an angle, and that gives it more spin.
Right.
But I didn't. I'd do it straight, and at the last moment,
you'd turn your hand.
My right hand just a little.
That's
bit,
what you showed me to do too. Yeah. Doug, do you think that the players nowadays, from 50 metres out, you are always a chance? Because if you can get onto a torp, it's a beautiful kick.
Prodigious stop.
And it takes no effort at all. It all comes back to timing. These guys that are professional now, or that are playing, from 50 metres out, they're not a chance. But you're always a chance from 50. Why don't they incorporate the torpedo into their artillery?
Because they don't
repertoire.
They don't practice it. That's all I did, was torpedo or drop kick.
So Don, if you listen,
were you as good at with the drop kick?
Yes, I was. Yeah.
Because you were on that champion kick. It was Paul Viner. I do remember him.
Yeah.
Yourself, John Nichols. You were always in the final.
Yeah, well, I won the final one year with a 70 metre drop kick.
Really?
Yes. Yeah.
Did you come to North Geelong as a full forward, or did you?
Might have been 65, perhaps 50.
50 now.
We'll say 70.
You're right.
Well, you finished with the.
No, because this man intrigues me.
If you're listening across the other side of the world, we've got many, many listeners all around the globe that take this.
We've picked up another one in Israel too.
Okay, Don, we'll lose them shortly if you keep going on about how to kick a drop kick. People in Israel would have no idea what you're talking about. We'll get on to it in a minute. The best story that Doug could tell you, and I've told it before, but people get a nice kick out of it when it's said by the person himself, is when we sold our business. We were in business for 10 years, Doug and I. We've stumbled along, and we were about 6 years into our business, and I got my old man in to say, just give us a rundown on how we were going fiscally. And he said, I've gone through the books. He said, I think the best thing would do is to post out a cheque to $25 to all your customers every week and don't bother going out and selling anything. But we turned the business around, Doug.
Well, what was the business?
It was called Technique Distributors. Mm. We sold ladies' hairdressing supplies to salons and some pharmacies. Some pharmacies. And we were offered to be bought out because the people up in the eastern seaboard of Australia in Queensland and New South Wales wanted a product we sold in Victoria, so they came down to buy our business. And Doug and I went up to Sydney, and our business acumen wasn't great. We were great footballers dabbling in business of hairdressing. And we go up, and I'll let Doug can tell this if you like, but we go up to the Hilton Hotel, and we walk into the boardroom, and the people who are trying to buy our business, they've got barristers and solicitors and attorneys and accountants and people sitting, there's about 20 of them sitting across the desk. And Doug and I arrived, and Doug was going to do all the talking, and he'd bought all the paperwork from the business just to give our side of the story about how we did the figures and what our projections were and all that. And Doug and I travelled light because we dabbled around in those days, because we weren't married, either of us, I don't think, Doug, were we? We weren't married in those days, and we travelled light because we used to have to get out of places quickly every now and again. And Doug had two portmanteaus, two cases. They were identical, and he'd put all the papers in one, so he brings the paper, the portmanteau, to the meeting, and he's got it on the desk there, and they are sitting opposite us, so they couldn't see what was in.
So what's in the other one?
Well, hang on a minute. This is Doug had brought two cases with him from Melbourne, one with these small effects in them and the other with the paperwork in it for the business. So we sit there, and the bloke opposite Doug, if you want to jump in any time, the bloke opposite, who was speaking for the people who were buying the business, said, Well, gentlemen, we believe that the fiscal arrangements, notwithstanding any deterioration in the financial climate, we think modellers who are building intricate decision trees, might be able to work out a financial and fiscal end to this. And we just put this proposition forward. And you say... And I nudged Doug. I said, "Doug, open the case." So he opens the case. He goes, he's got that side clicks. He goes, and he opens the case, and they can't see what's in the case. And I'm sitting looking at them, and I look over, just glance at the case. And in the case, there's an apple and a pair of hush puppies.
Hush puppies.
And I think a spare pair of underwear.
Yeah, used.
The underwear was used.
Soiled underwear.
Soil.
Hush puppies and an apple. He'd bought the wrong case. So Doug very casually closed the case down like that.
I was going to bring the case today.
And the underwear. So he very casually closed the case down, and I'm sitting there and I went... and Doug said... "Yes, gentlemen," he said, "I don't think we need to discuss this any further. We'll accept that offer." And so we all shook hands, true. And I kept a straight face, and we walk out into the foyer, and I said, What the fuck did we sell the business for, Doug? He said, "I don't know, but when they send the paperwork to us, we'll find out." And that was that's how we got rid of our business.
We got 50,000 and a car.
Doug, we did remarkably well. No thanks to you or me. So that was it. That's footballers trying to... You know how footballers get into business, Don. You were selling ladies' jeans,
underwear.
Weren't you? No, ladies' jeans, weren't you?
Were you into...
I was into our ladies' underwear.
Were you? Yeah. You into it, were you?
Yeah.
There's a lot of chat about that too, Don, in those days. There was a lot of rumours about you into getting into ladies' underwear.
Sorry? Weren't you into ladies' underwear?
No, it was hairdressing.
Oh, hairdressing.
No.
We could have combined businesses.
I know.
Of course, you're too smart for that, Doug.
Now, listen, that surfer, there's a well-known surfer down at Ocean Grove, Peter Jones, and he tells me you're sitting on a fortune, Doug. They've just rezoned your little farm.
Where?
What do you mean, where?
Your little farm, yes.
Yeah, and they've rezoned it and you're sitting on a fortune.
If only they would.
Hey?
I'd like to. Who told you Peter Jones?
Peter Jones, you know that eloquent ruckman from...
it's easy for you to say.
Now, Doug, we have also in the house...
I know, I'm waiting. The other side here.
He's become... He's quickly being known as the human headline. He vies with Warwick Kappa to see who can get the most press, the most dishonourable press, I might add. But this was the headline in the paper on the weekend.
This weekend?
Gee whiz, that's a hell of a party. And then there's a long diatribe of Kappa saying why Ricky Nixon, who is our guest sitting right here, is not coming to his party, and the jealousy that has erupted between who can have the biggest and best 60th birthday bash and who's coming to it and celebrities. And so we've got the man himself, and I want to ask you, Ricky, how is things going with young Warwick?
Sorry, I don't know who you're talking about. Who is he?
If you don't know who you'd be...
He's no Doug Wade, let's face it.
He wasn't bad at what he did at the Swans and kick goals, but I'm talking about how you're going with the relationship. How did that turn to shit?
He made a decision that we were going to have a joint 60th and then decided not to do it after I'd put in place a lot of things, and I said, I'll do my own then. And at the end of the day, you just do your own. It's better anyway.
Don't soften it down. That's not the real story.
Well, if you want one for the Herald Sun, I could say a few other things, but they don't report swearing, so, you know, we have to keep that out of it.
We're not doing this for the Herald Sun. We're doing this so people will know why the two great people who are in the Sporting Hall of Fame for getting their name in the paper have had a bust-up. I was asked to go to you. It was going to be a joint thing. There was thousands coming. There was entertainment. And now you've been relegated to the earlier party the week before, and he's having the one the week after.
Yeah. Well, I'm actually looking forward to mine because already it's just about sold out. Or not sold out.
Sold out. You're selling tickets to it.
Yeah. $1,000 a ticket.
Hang on. Listen, you're organising this thing down at Rosebud with Johnny at the hotel.
Yes.
I looked at the... Where is that? You've taken the ad away. I don't understand. There's $160 for a ticket, but if you have a photo, it's $300 and something. Why the difference in tickets? You cop that extra $150 yourself?
This is what the people who are organising a lot of these events now, I noticed, are doing ticket sales. Plus, if you want a photo with Doug Wade, it's an extra $150. Whereas if I do a function with Dane Swan, which I do every weekend, you know, Dane doesn't charge you $150 for a photo. That's part of the community service. I don't get it. I get it. It's about the money.
Could I quote from the article in the paper? Warwick Kappa says, Warwick, he's invited friends including Wayne... This is Warwick saying this. Invited friends including Wayne Carey, Sam Newman, Billy Brownless and Mick Gatto. Gatto is on security to make sure Nixon doesn't get into the room.
It's funny, I spoke to Mick Gatto yesterday, and I'm sure he won't mind me saying, Kappa's saying that he's coming to his to run security, and Mick said, I haven't even had an invitation from you, and I'm not going anyway. So it just puts everyone into the classic clickbait situation where you take sides. That's all it's about these days.
I see. So you're just saying that you're not, you haven't been shunned and you haven't been spurned. What can you offer that Warwick can't on birthday day?
Well, I can offer that my party is about my friends, my family, and everybody else has been great to me over the years, and we'll do it as a fun 80s style party. And Warwick's is all about one.
And whereabouts
thing.
Is it?
And
Rick?
How many will
it's
be
at the,
coming?
Pier Hotel.
Where's that?
Well, how many are coming? Well, there's only 300 places or can fill up.
So you've got 300 close friends and people who'd like to come to your birthday, have you?
Correct.
And the Pier Hotel is where?
It's in Bay Street, Port Melbourne, on the corner of my friend Dave Cambridge owns it, right on the beach, basically, at the end of Bay Street.
How many are coming to Warwick's?
Well, last count, there's only one, just him going on his own, I think.
No, he said, and you said, that he'd been sponsored by a women's magazine. Yeah. Is that right?
Why would a women's magazine sponsor Warwick Kappa's 60th birthday? Yeah, I don't think so.
So you think that's a lie?
Of course it is. It's just total crap. I mean, I don't want to cut to the chase.
He was at the races the other day. He's got a horse called Kappa 30.
He's got 1% in a horse, and he claims
Kappa
he owns
39.
It all. Yeah.
And he's got the leopard skin jacket. I think he had a leopard skin jacket on in the mounting yard.
Well, he's worn that for about 40 years. It's a little bit outdated now.
He fills it out
into
well.
It now. And he's pumped up. He's got Botox, and he's had skin fat put into his cheeks and taken out of his ass. He's pumped his chest up.
But who was a better full forward, in your opinion, Doug Wade or Warwick Kappa?
Well, that's a completely unfair question. You know who I think is the best full forward that I've actually seen. But give Warwick some credit. In the 2 years or the 3 years he was on Song, he was a very good and effective full forward. But, of course,
Doug... I don't think anyone would debate that.
Well, you were just saying who do you think's the best. Doug was the best player I saw, full forward, but... That's not to take any... I didn't see Coventry play, but Dunstall and Franklin and Lockett, of course, but, you know, Doug was mercurial. I don't know that Warwick was mercurial, but he was effective, Doug.
What's mercurial?
Pardon?
Mule.
Mercurial.
It's a woman's name.
He used to play for Essendon, didn't he?
Mark Mercurial. They did a survey on Triple M and 4 out of 5 people voted to come to mind.
For what?
Oh, we're back.
You're
onto
what?
You. Yeah. Sorry, I thought we were talking about Doug.
No, I'm going to move
on to Doug for a minute. Yeah. No, I thought we were talking about Doug, but we're back onto you. So they did a survey.
I want to talk about Doug.
4 out of 5 people would rather come to your birthday party than Warwick's. Who did that survey?
So
you.
I've been told.
Who did that survey?
No, my partner did it. No. I thought it was the police, actually, but anyway, we'll get on to that.
How are you going?
Where are you living too, Rick?
In Bay Street, Port
Melbourne. Oh, I thought you'd moved to Mount Gambier.
Well... There's another story. The local newspaper, we bought a house over there and we gave her as much as we can and said, we just want to do a story, Rick, on what you think of Mount Gambier. And, you know, and I said, it's a great place and, you know, the restaurants are great and I love the country life. 6 hours later, Tony Modger rings me, your front page of the Adelaide Advertiser. I said, for what? They got a picture of my partner Melissa out on Sam's boat, put me in a headlock, so they make it front page of the newspaper.
How would they get that? Because you put it on social media.
Melissa did. And now she's shut her Facebook account down, hasn't she? Because, you know, apparently she was
in the court. How are you going with the coppers? Every other week we ring up and you're either in court or you're batting, making... What are you doing? Denying stuff? How's that going?
Oh, it's going terrifically well. It just goes, let's adjourn it to the next one. Let's adjourn it to the next
one.
So
have you got a licence?
Yes, I have. But it's been reported that I lost my licence. Yes. But I just drove here just now. So if I've lost my licence, the police are welcome to come and book me for that too. As Sam said the other day, the famous quote from Jack Dry is a ripper. You tell him, Sam, of when police say to you, whatever you might say now can be held in court.
Oh, yes, they were written down.
But we can't probably put that on here. No, it's a bit rude.
All right, well, so you're not put out about the Kappa juggernaut cranking up for a big 60th. You're just going to have a nice, quiet 300, your closest 300 best friends coming. And we got to pay, do I didn't know we had to pay to
no,
get
No, you don't it. Have to pay. Hey? God.
Geez,
no.
You couldn't afford 300 people, that's cost you thousands.
Oh, no, the bar, you have to pay for your drinks after a certain time. There'll be a...
What, 5 minutes?
Less than that, I think. Probably 3 minutes. Depends if you come.
Would you come if you're invited?
Fuck, I wouldn't go. I wouldn't go to that.
No.
Why would I go?
Well, I don't know. You might meet someone.
I don't want to meet
him. He's already replied and said yes.
You might meet someone.
Who?
Well, I don't know. You've got to meet him first. How do I know? There'd be 100 people. I'm sure I saw there'd be some little strumpets coming along, Ricky, wouldn't they? You know them. You know the world's best group of people, don't you?
Yes.
Anyhow, well, we are, Chicken. Is there anything else?
Just very quickly, a person contacted me with the name of Nick McLean because he thinks that you're the biggest superstar on any podcast in the world and everything else, but he's offended that you make so much noise when you eat food on the podcast.
Yep.
And he'd like you to cease from making all the noise because he's not happy about it.
No, that's fair enough, Don. How many times have I told you to A, speak into the microphone, and B, don't...
Don't be a
dickhead. We've got Dennis and Nola and Elizabeth in. They're watching you. I've said, come in and watch the great Don Scott operate. And if you can understand anything he says because he's dyslexic or because he eats food while he's speaking, you'll be doing well. And you're just proving my point. Doug, do you ever go to the football, North or...
Not much, no.
Geelong's reunions?
No, not much. I did, yes.
Did you? When?
Do you know about that?
No.
Yeah, I did. 60th year. 60
what
years.
Do you mean, do I know about it? Is this a...
Yeah, I went to...
Has this been in the press, has it?
Oh, every year we have a reunion.
What happened?
Every year?
Well, every year we have a get-together. There's only 10 of us left now.
Yeah. That's the 63 grand final side.
63 grand final. Yeah. Both the seniors and the...
63.
And the...
Seconds. Seconds. I played
you
that.
You were in that.
I didn't get an invite.
Yes, you did.
Did I?
You would have got an invite. Yeah. Yeah.
I played from school in
and
the
it
seconds.
Was a Friday before the match, Greater Western, wherever that was, 2 weeks ago.
And what happened?
Well, we did. We had it on the Friday night. And it was fantastic, about 200. Everybody that was left on the...
Except me?
No, for the seniors.
Yep.
Yeah, everybody... I don't know how many of the seconds, but there was Tony Polinelli came from... Anyway, there was 10 of us came, yeah. We had a fantastic game.
And there's only 10 of you still around?
Only 10, sir. And then they invited us to the match next day, which we did.
Yes.
And went there.
And you said, did I hear about it, as if there was something to hear about.
Oh, well.
some journalists.
What was it to hear about?
Flaming war. Well, we got there.
Welcome to country?
Oh, for God's sake.
I'm starting.
It costs you $500 to get someone to do that.
Smoke and leaves and crap everywhere.
Yeah, well done, Doug.
And we were invited. The president, I can't think of his name now.
Of
Geelong. He was there and got up and said,
welcome to country.
No, they've done that before. Everybody gets up and says, welcome to country. And he said, and said, look, it's Fred Willow and 10 of his, and welcome. That was it. I thought we're going out on the ground and a few things, and then so we get there.
No seats.
Tell him Tony Polinelli is 3'8" at the moment. He used to be 5 foot.
He used to smoke a pipe at three quarter time. Borkum riff in the pipe.
That's right. Yeah, well, he was there. Well, Tony was there, and Billy Goggin. Billy was on crutches. Yatesy there from Mangan. Yeah, he was there.
Okay,
yeah,
so you've mentioned four, and then there would be...
Colin Rice. There was 10 of us anyway. Yeah. So we get there afterwards.
I think who else? Sherrick?
Johnny Sherrick was there,
Fred, well, you said Fred Willis.
Alistair
Lord.
Yeah. Well, nearly
that's about eight you got. Yeah, that's good. New, that's nice.
And then I thought, normally at a thing, you would talk about football, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Well, they had a couch. They put a couch there. And on the couch was the Deputy Prime Minister.
Yeah.
Miles, is it Miles?
Miles.
From Geelong. Yeah. Richard Miles.
Richard Miles was there.
Minister of Defence or
and
something.
And then the chairman of the AFL, he was in the, he was there. But his sidekick was a woman who looks after the smoking and all that stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And the leads.
Diversity and inclusion. And equity.
Which, yeah, especially in the last 6 years.
Yeah.
And they had a symposium.
Symposium?
Symposium.
On what?
The yes vote. Would you, for God's sake.
What, at a football reunion?
At a function, and I got up, and I was going to say something. I said, I was with a mate of mine. Liz couldn't come with me. So I got a bloke. Ron, it's terrible, isn't it? He's my best mate.
Ron Hosking.
What is it?
Hosking.
Morgan.
Morgan.
Oh. Morgan's not a, it's a
too much
name.
Concussion. Yeah, okay, that's the trouble.
Right. Well, I've had that too. A stroke hasn't helped you either.
No,
I can tell you that.
No.
And then I said to Ron, I've got to get out of here. And they're talking about it and getting up and saying, this is why you should. Mm. And the AFL, of course, have said it's got to be yes.
Oh, of course. And, they've fallen over themselves being virtuous.
So I said, Ron, go on, let's go. Get out of here at half time. This is before the match. And there's two. Oh, it doesn't matter. I better not say. But there's two girls. Oh, I got a blue with two women who was as white as you as me.
Yeah.
And I was talking to Ron about this and the divide first and all this, and this two women said how that racist that is. I said, I won't tell you what I said, but I didn't swear, but by gee.
Well,
then I get in the lift and there's a bloke. He's twice as big as me, and I'm saying this to this lady, and we're getting in the lift together, and this bloke heard, well, he got me into me. He's got the bloody Geelong scarf and everything, and he's into me.
What, as a racist?
Yeah.
That's the problem. No one's game to say they don't that they don't support the voice because you get accused of being...
I don't support it.
No. Well, because you get accused, but people
won't... No, because I don't know about
people
it.
People won't... That's fair why comment. You shouldn't support it. And I'll tell you, these are the ambered claims. This was on a document. We've read this out before. This was in Parliament, but we read this out some months ago. This is a document that was left. This is the ambered claim of the people who are constructing the voice. I'll read them out very quickly. These are the things that they want in the voice, and this is why you shouldn't vote for it. They want a minimum 10% Aboriginal to fill the minimum of 10% Aboriginal people to fill judges, mayors, the SES, the AFP and magistrates. That's first. Second, they want no entry fees for the university or any RMIT institutions. Thank you, Dennis. Three, old age pensions to be reduced because Aboriginals, qualifying period for old age to be reduced because Aboriginals die younger. Four, first preference on vacant public housing. They have first preference to be tenants in vacant public housing. Music and sport, a 50% reduction in fees if you go to any music event or any sporting event, because I presume they say it's on Crown Land. I'm not sure.
Where did you get all this from?
This was what was left on in a cafe of an ambered claim that was meant to make part of the voice, and it was read out in Parliament.
Yeah, but that's just one person's view, isn't it?
I'll tell you who this view this is. This came from a report was devised by the staff of the NIAA, which is the National Indigenous Australian Agency, and it was left 11-point bulletin. It was left on the table. I haven't finished yet. Parks and streams fees to be paid on parks and streams to Aboriginal tribes for water use. Mining, as above, all fees to be paid to the respective and the relevant tribes for mining permits. Income tax reduction of 50% for that. This is what it says. New liquor licenses to be vetted by the Aboriginals. New liquor licenses to be reviewed by Aboriginals and review all legislation as part of the voice. This is 11. These are 10 bullet points of an ambit claim they want, and it is the most divisive document. It will just, and I'm going to quote this again. I say it every time I say it. Lionel Rose said, "I don't go in for all this black and white stuff. I am an Australian and I call myself an Australian and I don't go in for any of that other stuff. We are Australians." That's what Lionel Rose said when he won the World Championship, I think, in 1968, didn't he? Whatever it was. I read that out every time. We are Australians, and why we have to give thanks for being in our country, have permission by Auntie Joy to do anything is absolute nonsense, and it's only started in the just in the 2000s, and it's gaining more oxygen all the time because no one's going to push back on it. It is absolute nonsense. I went to watch the boxing for a minute and a half when Tim Tszyu knocked out Mr. whatever his name was, his name was Carlos Ocampo. So 90 seconds, the $70 well spent for the pay TV, 90 seconds it went for. And the Welcome to Country, introduced by Jimmy Lennon Jr., he said, "Now, welcome to country." Well, that went on longer than the boxing. There's a bloke got out there and said how lucky you were to be watching it in the stadium. And this is our country. And by the way, it's all our countries. So if it's all our countries, why are we welcome anyone? Why are we welcoming anyone to it?
And wait for the start, because 3 minutes, the smoke will clear.
Now, can I ask Doug some football questions? Because I'm into the history.
Well.
Now, country football, you came from Horsham. Now, it must have been strong in those days, Horsham, because there was a guy playing at fullback. Did he come down the same time as you, Roy West?
Yes.
Did Gary Hamer also come from Horsham?
Yes.
So you must have had, and yourself, you must have had a
Johnny
very...
John
Brown from Horsham.
He's from Horsham.
So you must have had a very... country football must have been really, really strong back in those days.
Yeah, it was. Gary didn't come from there, but Roy West played at Stawell.
Oh, Stawell. I thought he was a Horsham boy.
No, yeah, he was John Stawell. Brown was with Horsham. Gary, I think, was in Shepparton, but all four of us came to Geelong at the same year and played our first game there.
Now, listen, as a full forward, when you started in the 60s, they didn't kick too many goals. But in the set, getting towards the end of the late 60s, there was four of you. There was a guy from Hawthorn called Peter Hudson. At Collingwood, there was Peter McKenna. At Carlton, Alex Jezelenko and yourself. You all kicked 100 goals in the season. Now, why was there such a transformation in football play? Because when you started in the 60s, you were struggling to get 50 goals a season as a full forward, and there might have, well, there was Tom Carroll, Pecky topped at one stage. Yeah,
surely
yourself.
You know the answer to that.
No, I don't know the answer.
Do.
I'm going to ask the full forward. Why did four of you kick 100? Did the game change dramatically?
Absolutely.
Well, shut up. You're not Doug Wade.
They moved
well,
it quick.
You must know this, Don.
I want to know.
They moved it quick
Sam,
to a one-on-one contest. They moved
Sam,
it to a one-on-one contest.
Right.
That's why.
Well,
instead of having two defenders knock it away from you, it went to a one-on-one contest, which you were better than the fullback.
Yeah, always. Yeah.
Okay, well...
I'm not always better.
No, no.
You're
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
You haven't answered my question.
Yeah, no, well, I can't understand the question. Well,
I'll answer it
for you. You're not the first person.
How come four of you could kick 100 goals in the late 60s, whereas they were struggling to get 50 or 60 goals when you first started?
Yeah, well, we didn't always kick them at the same time. That's, you know, it's over a period of time. I think Ricky was what is true, what we're saying, that it was man on man in those days. Now, you wouldn't know where the full forward is now.
Do you think, Doug, someone like yourself and those three players revolutionised... A reporter's rung me saying we're doing a story on who's revolutionised football over the years. And I was mentioning Diesel Williams with his quick hands and things like that. Yeah. But when we think about those four that you just said, Don, you probably changed the face of football. And then it became the Locketts after that, and the, you know,
we
the
also
Gary
had
Albertines.
Time to kick it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we weren't puffed by the time we got there.
Yeah, it's a good point.
But was the ball coming down quicker to you guys?
Well, most coaches, the reason full forwards were there in those days was to kick goals. And they left, Bobby Davis said, just put all away. What about Hudson?
Yeah.
Well, he told us all the
things. Kerry. Same
well, even Tony Lockett, who I played with, you didn't even look. You just turned and kicked it as quickly as you could to the goal square, and he'd mark it 9 out of 10 times.
Surely
you are being the devil's advocate, Don. You know very well why
still eating.
Those four people were successful, because the instructions were when you got the ball, rather than chipping it towards the back line or hand passing or keeping possession, look for the designated goal kickers who are by far
but
the best
John,
people and
John,
accurate.
There's never been a period in football's history where four of them have kicked over 100 goals
because
in a season.
Because they were talented.
Four.
Because they were talented players and given a chance to use their talent by the quick transference of the ball down to a one-on-one situation. And don't forget, the back line always has to wait for the forward man to make his move. And they were so good at it, and Doug could stick his arse out, and they were getting between your opponent and the ball. You know very well that that's why
what
it was successful.
What did you consider your strength,
and
Doug?
As for Ricky Nixon...
Will you shut up,
well,
please?
Just a minute, Don. As for Ricky Nixon saying that Diesel William was the architect of the modern game, there's no doubt the man who changed the way the game's played was Graham Farmer, who was the first person to start offensive handball rather than defensive handball. He changed the way the game is played, absolutely.
Jug, what do you consider your strengths?
My strength was marking.
Overhead or chest?
It didn't matter.
And niggly?
I was niggly. Yeah.
You fucking oath, you were niggly.
What, you'd whack blokes?
Oh, he was angry. Yes, you did.
No, did he really?
He was as angry as 12
but
men.
But your great kicking was the highlight
kicking,
for
yeah.
me
no,
as a kid
but
growing
I had
up.
An ability, ever since I was a kid, I had an ability to know where the ball was. Always watched the ball, always, and what was going to. And I had an ability, just an innate, I didn't have to think about it. I knew where the ball was about to come. And so I'd lead.
Yep.
In a position, not always did I ever get it.
Nine out of ten.
Though. I know you won't. Nine out of ten.
I know you won't believe this, but speaking about torpedoes, I've kicked a kick in VFL football, 92 meters. One day, it's the
That's
second
back
longest.
Back to you, kick. Chicken, is it?
No, I was just saying how he's talking about torpedoes.
Sorry,
torpedoes.
No, Doug did a 70-metre drop kick at the World of Sport, done a 90-metre torp. And,
92,
and well
get
done,
it right.
And you've got
get
more
right.
people coming to your birthday party. And what else did you say when we got onto Doug? You speak about, said something about
No,
yourself.
I was talking about his torpedoes.
Yeah, the torpedoes,
Where did you do this 90-metre torp,
At Moorabbin. It's on YouTube.
Fucking bullshit.
Because everybody, Wayne Carey said, that's bullshit, you're full of shit, da-da-da. I picked up my phone and gone, there you go. And he goes, Jesus.
That was Jeff Herring, wasn't it?
Jeff Herring had the longest kick at the same ground, 110 metres, I think it was. He went through, he kicked it from the centre circle through the goals on the full.
Doug, the other thing is, he transferred, as captain of Geelong, you transferred to North Melbourne. Why? And for how much, there must have been money involved.
Had a good manager.
So why did you transfer number one and two? How much money was there?
Would you like me to tell that story, Doug?
Hey?
Would you like me to tell it? No, I won't tell it.
What?
Well, I think the statute of limitations is over for the tax department, isn't it?
one of those, a brown paper bag, Doug, wasn't it?
So Don, this is absolutely true. We had an office in Geelong in Little Mallop Street or somewhere, McCann Street, our Technique Distributors, and Doug had been approached by Ron Joseph, the late Ron Joseph, and the heavy hitters at North. Would he come to North Melbourne in 74 or 5 or 73?
3, 4, 5.
Yeah, so
73.
I'm where in the office, and Doug said, Sam, I'm just going out. I've got a meeting with some people. And I said, which people? He said, I've got a meeting with some North Melbourne people. And he went away and he came back about an hour and a half later. Mm-hmm. And he's got Coles didn't have paper bags in those days, but he had a big brown paper bag. And it was fairly bulging, and I thought it might be his lunch. And he put on the table, he said, I said, what was that about? He said, have a look at that. And I said, and he tipped it upside down, and I had never seen so much money all at once
in
the same place.
How much was the deal?
This was it was a lot of money. I'm telling you, it was a lot of money.
I worked in the bank. You worked in the bank, right?
And we didn't see that much in a day.
In those days, all the notes were tied by string, and they were tight. And
bundles of them.
Bundles of them. And there were bundles in five, hundreds. Or, and I was at the Old Melbourne with Alan Arlett, a solicitor from Winnicky.
Well, Winnicky.
John
Winnicky or
I didn't have a solicitor. I was just by myself.
Yeah. Bit like and when they we said, sold look, the business.
I said, no, look, I'm going to go back to Geelong because Polly was then the coach, and I said, Polly wants me to play there, and he said he promised me that I'd kick over 100 goals, I'd play it. I said, and Ron Joseph, it was a huge big table, and I looked at this, and Ron Joseph pulled something out, and it was sitting on the it was a square, a rectangle, about that big. And he cut the strings, and it opened up. Well, it was tight, you know.
Tight, yeah.
And
they
when
just tumbled out when like building blocks.
And I said, "How much is that?" I said, "He said I will give you that and another $10,000 a year."
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was only just $10,000 a sweetener.
A year.
That wasn't the salary. That was just a
what
sweetener.
What year was that, Doug? What year?
73. I mean, we were on $300 a week.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. What was the deal?
Was on $3,000.
That was just a sweetener.
Well, that's a lot more than...
Shit.
Bruce Dool asked me once what I was on, and I was on, in 1981, 15 grand, but he was on less.
So I said, how much is
just a minute. We've got it back to Ricky. Ricky was on how much?
Geez, sorry, I better not speak.
No, I'm interested.
I'll put some tape
Don hasn't told us how much he was on, or you did. I haven't told you how much I was on, but... How much were you on, Ricky?
Well, where I made the mistake was I said, as we were walking out, Bruce Dool said to me, as a young bloke, how much do you get paid? And I said, 15,000. He's gone, 15,000? He goes, I'm only getting five. Anyway, the coach pulled David Parker, called me, they said, why did you tell Bruce Dool you're on 15,000 a match? I said, I didn't say a match. I said, for the year. Bruce Dool thought I was getting $6,000 more than him a game.
Yeah. Well, I got 20,000.
20,000, did you? In 73.
And I bought a house.
Yeah. Yeah, you would have. Yeah.
For $20,000.
Yep. Yeah.
A double story house, still there on the on the corner. Yeah. I know. That was $20,000.
Well still there, is it? Well built. Well,
and I didn't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
And I had a big Fairlane.
Yeah.
And it had the biggest console of all, in the middle. Yeah. Used to have a huge console. And I'd put a air dig. Well, it wasn't an air thing at the top. I'd screwed it on the top. So it looked like
an air dam.
Where the air comes
from. Yeah, an air dam, a scoop.
Yeah, a scoop. Like you.
That's right, I remember it.
Yeah, the black air.
I remember a lot more about your life than you think I do, Doug.
I said, where am I going to put this? So it was in the glove box for probably 2 weeks. I had to put it inside and then I finished, I put it into a bank.
Were there any memorable races between you and John coming back down the highways from your country trips?
Would have been, for sure.
We did, actually.
Yeah, what?
He had a
grey, yellow.
No, yellow. We both had yellows.
You both had the yellow GTs. Falcons from Bobby Davis, who was working at Dawson
GT,
Ford.
GT Falcons.
Right. From Dawson Ford.
Yeah.
And I said to one day, I said to Bob, I think we, you better come in. He said, and I'll see if I can do a deal for the both of you. He said, what colour do you want them? And I said, Bob, we just want. He said, I got two nice yellow ones here. Because no one would buy them, I don't think, because they look like bloody canaries. And he said, why don't you come in and then we'll sign them up. So we go in there and I said, no, fair dinkum, these are unbelievable. I'll drive one myself. And so he conned us and we
it took us 2 months to get them because they have been made specially.
Did you ever get...
We know that he'd already
sold them to...
Yeah, we get up to...
He sold us nothing that was actually had been produced at that stage.
But what thing you're talking about, Don, was we'd both landed together. We had training coming at on Thursday afternoon. We both... Sam, at that stage, was doing the farmers, he said.
Country work.
Country work, farmers. And I was doing...
He was doing the farmers.
Farmers.
Sam was working.
And I was doing ladies' hairdressers. And so we had two divisions then.
Oh, two.
and we both landed at the same place in Albury.
What airport you mean?
No, you idiot. We turned at our last call of the week was at Albury, him doing the pharmacies and me doing the, or vice versa.
Yeah, yeah.
And we said, well, we'll go home now. So
we better go.
We get in these magnificent, fair dinkum, unbelievable yellow falcons that Bobby Davis had sold us. And we have a head of steam up by about Euro. And we thought, gee, we'll get home. We're going a bit slow. So in those days, I don't think there was a speed. Was there a speed limit in those days? No, there wasn't a speed limit in those days.
Was it?
This was in the 60s, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Late 60s?
Well, it might have been a 70s? Speed limit, yeah.
But there's no speed limit, so we were doing 90 miles an hour coming down. I think it wouldn't go any faster
than
the car.
Down the hill, just out of Tullamarine.
And the copper, the police, he took us, it took him 7 miles to catch us. He's in a souped up, one of those Chrysler.
Valiant thing.
You know, they're in a, I can't remember that. A Charger, a
Peugeot, was it?
Oh,
I can't remember what that. Yeah. They're American cars. They're American cars that they. At any hour, they eventually caught us up and they pulled us over. And the cop cars were on the side of the freeway. I don't think there's even a freeway. He's in the middle of us. There's the one yellow falcon in front of the cop car and the other yellow falcon behind it. And he's got us out and he's given us a dressing down. He said, "What in God's name do you think you two are doing?" And he said, and Doug, I think, of some feeble excuse.
I said,
we weren't driving dangerously.
Sir. I said, sir, or something like that. I said, two for one, sir.
that got his attention.
He said, get in the F and cut the other back one there. He said, I'll see you later.
That's correct. And Doug said, yes, speeding. And Doug said, but we weren't driving dangerously. Which was a reasonable. Yeah, car was going beautifully.
Yeah.
So I honestly believe we got off.
I think we did.
We shouldn't say that because we wouldn't get any favourable treatment because of our names. But the copper just thought, I think it was late and he couldn't be bothered doing the paperwork. He just wanted to get home.
We had to go to training anyway.
Yes, and he might have been the same copper
that let me off on the way to Euro. I was on a running meeting. I was sitting on 100. And he let me off.
Yeah.
Doesn't happen these days.
It doesn't happen these days. No, now, the other story...
Chicken hasn't been let off. He's going to get himself into this conversation.
Hard to get a word in.
Give him a chance to get in. Now, what about your driving, Chicken?
Well, you know, electric scooter goes well at the moment. You don't need a licence. You don't need anything. Just drive your electric scooter around.
So can we bring it back to football now?
No, because Chicken, I'm sure he had a bigger feeling than you with the air down.
I had another question for Doug.
All right.
Can I ask him another football question?
Well, hurry up, because that's it.
Now, the grand final, you played in the 1975 grand final, North Melbourne. Is it true?
75.
It's
North Melbourne, yeah.
Yeah, North Melbourne. Now, is it true that you were out of the team? You went back to... later on in the evening while the match committee were meeting, put your case forward. They put you in at full forward. You weren't allowed to fly for marks. You just had to stay on the ground and take what crumbs came off you. You kicked, four goals?
You did.
Something like that. Is that a true story that you were out of the team, you had to go and plead your case, you got in?
Yes.
That is true, Doug.
That is true.
I know, because you've told me that.
That is true. And there was a spot, though, for me, because Richard McKeltrick...
Blight? Brassy?
Brassy was coach. But also Richard McKeltrick did his knee.
Yep.
And they said that I didn't play the game before, and I knew that I was struggling to get in the game.
Yep.
Because it was going to be my last game.
Yep.
So Brassy saw me and said I was out of the side, or somebody, anyway, but they had a match committee and I knocked on the door. We didn't say.
I can do this.
Yeah.
Give me a chance.
Yeah. And
he said, fuck off.
I think Alan Arnold had a lot to do with a lot of that as well. And to his credit, Brassy, he said, look, leave it with me. And I thought, that was it. So I was in. I went home, and about 9 or 10 o'clock at night.
You were shicker because you thought you weren't going to get a
game. No, I wasn't joking, Doug. And there's a knock on the door, and so I went in. There's Brassy, with a chess set. With a chess set.
Chess set. Where's this going?
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah.
And I said, Ron. He said, "Come, can I come in?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "Yeah, come in." He sat down. He said, "It was like let's have a game of chess." I said,
"What,
Ron? Am I in the effing team or not?" He said, "You're
depends
in the
on
team.
The next move."
But here's the deal. They'll expect you to be flying for the ball all the time, the market. You are not to get off the ground. You got to stay there. And I said, that's my thing is taking a mark. And he said, that's what I want you to do. You just stay in there. Well, you couldn't believe it. That's what I did. And the ball came over the back. And I kicked four goals, three or something.
Yeah.
Feltham threw the ball to me instead of handball. And I kicked a goal there. But then they came back. And another bloke wouldn't give me the one, Arnold Brightus. Should have handed to me. I could have finished five or six goals, and I never moved. Yep. I just sat in the goals.
That was against Hawthorn in 1975.
1975.
What, do you want me to ask a question?
No, so, I'm sure that you have anything you want to comment on that, Chicken.
No, who would it? You played at North Melbourne and Geelong.
Yeah.
Now here's one of the most famous Geelong names. Who were the biggest stars? Do you think at both those clubs? Like I can remember people like Keith Gregg. You know, those sort of players, they were just unbelievable
watching
them.
There was a heap of them at that stage. Gregory Schimmelbusch.
Sam Kekovic.
Yeah.
Did you play with him? Or?
Yeah, Sam, yeah. Barry Cable,
yeah.
Denchy,
he was a great player,
yeah.
How's Barry Cable going, do you reckon, at this stage? Now, there's going to be a real dilemma shortly about the AFL, about Mr. Cable, and we're not passing any judgment on it, but... if you go and have a look at who has been made a legend or a Hall of Famer...
Exactly.
There's a lot of people who have got some strikes against the name, but this is a very serious strike. They're going to have to front up and decide what they do with Mr. Cable as a member of the legends of the AFL, let alone the Hall of Fame.
This is confirmed, is it?
It has
been. It's confirmed now, yes. He's admitted to guilt, but... I asked the question, how does that, if he's been in the Hall of Fame for playing football, and I'm not defending what he's done, but I'm just saying, how does something he's done in his private life change it? You're in the Hall of Fame for
Because there's a criteria, Ricky, as you know, that it's not just about football prowess, it's about
John, but how do others, going back to the 1950s, Don, there are guys Don, in there in the 1950s.
I'm with you, Don.
Who have actually
transgressed.
Been in jail.
I'm with you, Don. But the instructions laid out in to be a legend or a Hall of Famer is that besides being a good footballer, you have to be of a model citizen and not being you have to be beyond reproach. And that's if I can just finish on this, so the Bombers, Essendon now, are in the dilemma. For God's sake, the committee now are deciding that we won't have the motive as the bomber, you know, the fighting machine, the warplane, because that's politically incorrect to have a fighting machine in this day and age. We'll call them the Bombers, but we'll change the emblem. Have you ever heard of anything more ridiculous? If you don't change, if you change the emblem, you can't call them the Bombers, can you?
No.
So this you can't. This is like the Formula One. They didn't have the F-111 fly over the grid at the start because they said it was promoting war. Can you believe this? These are the people that are actually running your life for you and telling you what line to toe. And then we had that stupid woman, Chrissy. I was speaking to her about having grid girls, and she said, "Oh, it was demeaning to the grid girls." I said, "Not at all. The grid girls look fantastic, and that's how they earn money, by being looking good.
Yeah.
And you're decrying them from earning an income." Dumbass she was. Yeah. So, what are the Bombers going to do?
How do we live free in this country? I hate war, but without fighting for your bloody country, where are we going to be? We wouldn't be where we are now.
Yep.
I can tell you.
What, through the Second World War? That's an era threat to us.
Some of the wars, we won't get to some wars like Iraq and that, which I felt that was...
Roosevelt at Pearl Harbor said, "I hate war. My wife, Eleanor, she hates war. Even our son, Jimmy, he likes his peace." That's what she said. Now, Doug and Don and Ricky, we're going to wind this up because we...
Why?
Because we've been going for 54 minutes. Jeez. And we think the concentration span of the people who listen
to this... Is that who we're appealing to, people with low...
That's exactly who we're appealing to, Don. Okay. Do you think nuclear physicists would listen to this?
Yes. We've got a lot of very intellectual...
Cheerio to the nuclear physicists. We're going to come back and this is the end of part one.